O my brothers, Avanta, have you given us the share of our father's property? Kim, what? Payam, unto me. Vajama, we allot. Pitaram, the father himself. Tava, as your share. Quam, you. Mama, unto me. Aryaha, my elder brothers. Tata, O my father. Avangshuhu has given the share. Ma, do not. Putraka, O my dear son. Tat, to this statement. Adrittaha, give any importance. Translation. Nabhaga inquired. My dear brothers, what have you given to me as my share of our father's property? His elder brothers answered, we have kept our father as your share. But when Nabhaga went to his father and said, my dear father, my elder brothers have given you as my share of property, the father replied, my dear son, do not rely upon their cheating words. I am not your property. So there's no purport to this text, nor the next few, more than a few texts. So keep reading until we get to a sizable purport. There's a little history on this. So Nabhaga went to the Brahmacharya ashram as his brothers were thinking he's not coming back. Because sometimes there's brahmacharis, actually, omagana timirandasya kananjana shlakaya chakshudan miditam yena tasmai shivadimah. So sometimes there's brahmacharis who are naishtiki brahmacharis who never get married. Sometimes there's brahmacharis who get married after 1 week, after a little training, sometimes after 2 years of training. But in any case, his brothers thought that he is going to be a naishtiki brahmachari and never get married, but didn't happen. So we actually see that family conflicts occur in many cases when there's some inheritance, where there's some idea of taking the father's property. And I've seen that over and over again. It's a very common thing, that brothers turn against brothers, sisters turn against sisters when there's money concerned. And this is what we're going to be dealing with today when we get later on in this purport, later on in this chapter. So text 3. Ime angi angirisa sutram asate gya sumeda saha shastam shastam upetyaha kave mu yanti karmani. Nabhaga's father said, all the descendants of Angira are now going to perform a great sacrifice. But although they are very intelligent, on the every sixth day they will be bewildered in performing sacrifice and will make mistakes in their daily duties. And there's a short purport here. Nabhaga was very simple-hearted. Therefore, when he went to his father, the father in compassion for his son suggested that as a means of livelihood, Nabhaga could go to the descendants of Angira and take advantage of their misgivings in performing yajna. Text 4-5. Tam tvam shangsaya sukte dve vishvadeve mahatmanaha te swaryanto dadham sutra parishishitam atmanaha the shanti te ta kanaksha tatasa kritavanyata tosmai dhatvaya yu swargam te sutra parisheshanam. Nabhaga's father continued, go to these great souls and describe two Vedic hymns pertaining to Vaishvadeva. When the great sages have completed the sacrifice and are going to the heavenly planets, They will give you the remnants of the money they have received from the sacrifice. Therefore, go there immediately. Thus, Nabhaga acted exactly according to the advice of his father, and the great sages of the Angira dynasty gave him all their wealth and then went to the heavenly planets. So, text 6. Tam kaschit svikarishyam tam purusha krishna darshanaha uvachutta ratho vyeta vecha mamedam vastu kang vasu. Thereafter, while Nabhaga was accepting the riches, a black-looking person from the north came to him and said, all the wealth from this sacrificial arena belongs to me. And text 7. Mamedam shibhirdhatam iti tarisma manavaha sannaute pitari prashta prashtavan vitaram yata. Nabhaga then said, these riches belong to me. The great saintly persons have delivered them to me. When Nabhaga said this, the black-looking person replied, let us go to your father and ask him to settle our disagreement. In accordance with this, Nabhaga inquired from his father. Text 8. Yagna vastu gatam sarvam uchistam nishaya kvachit chakurhi bhagam rudraya sateva sarvam arhati. The father of Nabhaga said, whatever the great sages sacrificed in the arena of the Daksha Yajna, they offered to Lord Shiva as his share. Therefore, everything in the sacrificial arena certainly belongs to Lord Shiva. Text 9. Nabhagastam pranamyatha tavesha kila vastu kang ityahame pita brahman chirasa tvam prasadhihe. Thereupon, after offering obeisances to Lord Shiva, Nabhaga said, O worshipable Lord, everything in this arena of sacrifice is yours. This is the assertion of my father. Now with great respect, I bow my head before you, begging your mercy. Text 10. Yatte pitavatadharman tvam jasacham prabhashashe Dadamite mantra drisho yanam brahma sanatanam. Lord Shiva said, whatever your father has said is the truth, and you also are speaking the same truth. Therefore, I, who know the Vedic mantras, shall explain transcendental knowledge to you. Text 11. Urunhana dravenang datam matsat tra parishishitam ityuktvantarhito rudro bhagavan dharma vatsalaha. Lord Shiva said, now you may take all the wealth remaining from the sacrifice, for I give it to you. After saying this, Lord Shiva, who is most adherent to the religious principles, disappeared from that place. Text 12. Yahetat samsmarat prata soyam cha sushma gitakha kavir bhavati mantra gyo gathim chaiva tathat maraha. If one hears and chants or remembers this narration in the morning and evening with great attention, he certainly becomes learned, experienced in understanding the Vedic hymns, an expert in self-realization. Text 13. Nabhaga nambarisho pun mahabhagavata kriti nasprishadram shahopi yang na prati hatakvatits. From Nabhaga, Maharaj Ambarisha took birth. Maharaj Ambarisha was an exalted devotee, celebrated for his great merits. Although he was cursed by an infallible Brahmana, the curse could not touch him. That's 14. Shri Radhavacha Bhagavan Shrotum Ichami Rajasheshtasya Dimatkha Na Prabhudyatra Nirmukto Ramadando Duratyayaha. King Parikshit inquired, O great personality, Maharaj Ambarish was certainly most exalted and meritorious in character. I wish to hear about him. How surprising it is that the curse of a Brahmin, which is insurmountable, could not act upon him. And finally, the next two texts, 15 to 16. Shri Shiva Vacha Ambarisho Mahabhaga Sapta Dvipa Vatim Mahim Avyayam Cha Shriham Lopwa Vibhavam Chatulam Bhuvi Meni Ti Durlapam Bhum Sang Sarvam Tat Svapna Sang Sutam Vidvam Vibhava Nirvanam Tamo Vishati Yatpuman. Sukadeva Goswami said, Maharaj Ambarish, the most fortunate personality, achieved the rule of the entire world, consisting of seven islands, and achieved inexhaustible, unlimited opulence and prosperity on earth. Although such a position is rarely obtained, Maharaj Ambarish did not care for it at all, for he knew very well that all such opulence is material. Like that which is imagined in a dream, such opulence will ultimately be destroyed. The king knew that any non-devotee who attains such opulence merges increasingly into material nature's mode of darkness. So, purport by his divine grace, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. For a devotee, material opulence is insignificant, whereas for a non-devotee, material opulence is the cause of increasing bondage. For a devotee knows that anything material is temporary, whereas a non-devotee regards the temporary so-called happiness as everything and forgets the path of self-realization. Thus, for the non-devotee, material opulence is a disqualification for spiritual advancement. So, Omagada Timiradvasha, Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Meditam Kena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. So, as Krishna states in the second chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Nasatara Vitakai Bhavo Nabhavo Vichitai Sattva, Ubayar Api Drishtavantas Vanios Tattva Darshavi, that the sages have a very interesting understanding of this material world. And that understanding is that those things which don't continue to exist, they're considered unreal. Not unreal in the sense that they're not there. It's not that, like the Beatles said in the 1960s, strawberry fields forever. Nothing is real. But unreal in the sense that they have no continued existence. You don't take them so seriously. That's the real point. Like this chair. Yes, it's a chair. I am sitting on it. However, I don't think this chair will continue to exist. Maybe for another 25, 30, 40 years. After a while, the devotees will throw it into the garbage or whatever, make a firewood out of it, heat their cabins with it or whatever they're going to do in 30, 40, 50 years from now. And it will become ashes and the different elements will enter into the air, whatever. And this body too that we're taking so seriously and spending so much time decorating it, trying to remain young, giving it health, different health things, you know, going to the health food store, looking up on the internet, finding out the best herbs to take. We spend so much time like it, Googling on the internet. Of course, not that we shouldn't do that, but then this body ultimately will either be ashes for this cremation, or food for worms, or as the Parsis do, food for what? Does anyone know?
Vultures.
The partridge, they actually would throw the body off of a high tower and let the vultures eat. Not all Buddhists do that. And then, of course, if you're from a particular primitive culture, the body may become food for your nephews or nieces or for your children or grandchildren. So anyway, so it's not going to continue to exist, although we take it so seriously. Now, how do we become detached from this body? How do we become detached from the material opulences is the question. Because these material opulences, Janmayishvarya, Shrutasya, Shibir, Edamananda, Apaman, material opulence doesn't simply mean money. According to Queen Kunti, material opulence can mean being born in a so-called good family or respectable family or prominent, prestigious family. Just like I remember when I was young, I was taught by my mother that we're born, our family is the best, and our religion is the best. We're the chosen people, as they say in our religion. And everybody else is... Anyway, they had some pejorative words for everybody else, which I'm not going to mention in a different language. And so you become very proud of your family. So, Janmayishvara, you become proud of your money, as we mentioned before. Shrutasya, Shibir, you become very proud of your learning. You know, you think if you're more intelligent than other people, then you sort of look down upon other people. And then, Shrivir, you become very proud of your bodily beauty, which doesn't last very long. And so, Edamana Adalpuman, Queen Kunti says that one becomes very proud of these things. So these bewilder one. So how does one renounce this? How does that one become detached from the false pride, from the attachment? Does one simply go to the Himalayas and dress in deerskin? Of course, you can also become proud of the deerskin. Or dress in just some rags in the Himalayas and act like an urchin. Is that the solution? No, that is actually not the solution. That's called Falgu Vairagya. Vairagya means renunciation from the passionate things of this world. Vairagya, from passion. So there's an interesting statement. Rapanchakatya buddhya harisabandha vashtana purjahi vairagyam falgu katyate. That there is false renunciation, falgu vairagya. It's called falgu vairagya. Prabhupada actually one time gave the major story that there's a river, or cited an incident. There's a river called the Falgu River. And in that Falgu River, there's no water in it. But if you go right below the surface, then, you know, dig a little bit, a few inches down, or a few feet down, the water is running, the water table is there. So that's called the Falgu River, or the False River. And so Falgu Vairagya is like that too, that someone appears to be very, very renounced. Just like somehow or other I saw a video the other day of Kumbh Mela, and the yogis who were wearing nothing, I mean literally naked yogis, who appeared to be very renounced, but actually they were showing off their different powers. I mean, one of the powers they were showing off, I can't even mention in class. You saw that? It was disgusting. Anyway, I'm not mentioning it had to do with someone's private parts. So, but you see, they were actually shutting how much they could lift up, with, anyway, whatever. And it was disgusting, but you see, it was just false renunciation because they were just showing off. They were naked and they were showing off. Not parts, not specifically parts of the body, but they were showing off different powers that they had. That's called Falgu Vairagya. And so If one simply gives up external things and doesn't understand to whom those external things in this world belong, that's false renunciation. Because real renunciation, I'm Prabhupada, let's, I mean, there's the typical story that Prabhupada tells to illustrate this point. He said, once upon a time, there was someone who left money in the street. You've all heard this story before. Someone who left money in the street. And so someone else comes along and he takes the money. He's the thief, of course. Or it's improper for him to take the money. And another person comes along and he says, I renounce the money. That's also stupid because it wasn't his to renounce. And another person comes along, the devotee, hopefully, and the devotee buys some books and distributes. Anyway, no, the devotee takes the money and finds out who the money belongs to. And Prabhupada said that's the right thing to do. In other words, this material energy doesn't belong to us. So the whole point, the whole reason we're attached is that we think it belongs to us, it's meant for our enjoyment. And as soon as we understand that everything belongs to Krishna, meant for Krishna's enjoyment, that's called yukta vairagya. And that word yukta is very interesting. Yuj means connection. Just like you have the word yoga, which is actually coming from the same root, which means to connect one. So yuda means using the material energy to connect you with God, because it belongs to God. It's meant to be used for his particular purposes. And therefore, when you do it, there's another interesting verse in the Bhagavad Gita that describes this. Brahmarpanam brahmaham vir. Brahmagno brahmanahutam. Brahmatena gantavyam brahma kama samadhyam. So, this statement in the Bhagavad Gita describes that when one makes an offering to Krishna, and of course Krishna is the supreme Brahman. Brahman means spirit, also means the greatest. Brahma means the greatest. So then that offering becomes spiritualized, just like we have our prasada, which is not time yet for prasada. I'm not looking at the watch. I'm just checking the time for class, not the time for eating. Just like we have our prasada, that means spiritual food. So you can take some ordinary material substance, like potatoes or any of these vegetables or whatever. Okay, so we're not talking about meat, because meat can't be offered to Krishna. And you offer it to Krishna, and it becomes spiritualized. Not only prasadam, in terms of the food, can become spiritualized, but the everything you offer to Krishna, just like this chair, if you utilize this chair in Krishna's service, then the chair becomes spiritualized. Now, not that the chair at that point becomes eternal, and your prasadam certainly doesn't become eternal, but it no longer has the modes of nature connected to it. It becomes spiritualized. And then, therefore, if you associate, especially taking prasadam or music that is meant for the pleasure of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, if you hear and associate with that, then your consciousness can also become spiritualized, will also become spiritualized by that association. So that's the principle of yukta vairagya. Now, many times Prabhupada was criticized for utilizing that particular understanding or principle. You know, people would ask Prabhupada, you know, why are you using the microphone? Oh, why are you coming in a car, a Rolls Royce or something like that? And one time the devotees picked him up in a Rolls Royce. Several times that happened. And Prabhupada actually said at one point that a gold car would not be good enough for the spiritual master. Because, not that Prabhupada was attached to having a gold car or anything. Prabhupada was completely satisfied living in Vrindavan before he came to the Western world. And the reason he came to the Western world, the reason he accepted material opulence, was for our benefit, to help us come closer to Krishna, and to please the, ultimately to please the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So that's real renunciation, to use something and not be attached to it, and use something in Krishna's service, to give it to the actual owner, that's Krishna. So Maharaj Ambarish was like that, as we're going to hear later on, Savaya Manak Krishna Padaravindayo. He fixed his mind on Krishna, he engaged his feet in walking to the temple of Krishna, his nose and smelling the tulsi leaves and flowers offered to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, touching the lotus feet of the devotees. So it's not that he gave up his sensual engagement in this world, but utilized his sensual engagement to please the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And therefore, he was renounced. He was a completely, that's real renunciation. And that's what sannyas means. And of course, he wasn't a sannyasi in a formal sense, but the word sannyas is composed of two parts. There's sun and yas. Nyas means to renounce. Like you have, if someone's a nyasi, that means he's a renunciate. Sun means to accept or put together, just like you have sankirtan, which is the same word basically. That means congregational chanting. So sannyas means to accept things and renounce things, to accept everything favorable for serving Krishna, and to give up everything that's not favorable. Lord Chaitanya's first two surrendering practices and principles. So in essence, Maharaj Ambarish here is showing sannyas life. And that's really what a sannyas is, not someone who lights no fire, as Krishna says, a chants no mantra, but someone who actually gives the fruits of his activities to the Supreme Personality of God. And this is the lesson in Bhagavad Gita. So, anyway, any questions or comments? Yes?
In regard to Kumbh Mela, Prabhupada one time was there, and someone came to him and said, oh, my yogi, my guru is so great, you can walk across the Ganges. And Prabhupada said, well, that's nothing. For five paisa, I can take a boat. And said, the real mystic power is happening in all these Westerners, devotees.
He turned hippies into happies. That was his miracle. But, you know, you find many times these yogis, they just want to show off their power, they're interested in material opulences, and they appear very renounced. But what is it? It's like the Falgu River, that you just go below the surface, and there's water.
Another form of material.
Material enjoyment can be subtle. We have this, of course, the gross enjoyment, and then there's the subtle enjoyment, which is profit, adoration, and distinction. Someone may enjoy just being worshipped, may live in a poverty-stricken condition, but if he's being paid respect by many people or whatever, then that's profit, adoration, and distinction. Of course, that's called subtle sex life. So one has to be careful about these subtle types of enjoyment, to enjoy being appreciated. And of course, that's one of the tricks as one gets, that's what, not tricks, but downfalls or problems as one gets more advanced in devotional service, as we've heard many times from Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, the different causes of anarthas. You know, there's obvious causes, you know, sinful activities, maybe not so obvious, pious activities, offenses, that's pretty obvious. And then you have the byproducts of bhakti. Because as you advance in devotional service, people naturally respect you. Because you may have more knowledge, you may have more renunciation, you may be able to preach nicely, whatever. And this is a danger. And as I mentioned many times before, like if one is a guru, then you get so much appreciation. You know, people write books about you. Like right now, someone's writing a biography about me. You know, how many people have biographies written about them? Isn't it? You have a professional writer writing a biography. And, you know, it can go to the head. It can go to someone's head. So one has to be extremely careful and maintain their humility and always understand that they're servants. Kopi Bharata Parakamala Dasa 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 Dasa. So any other questions or comments? Or comments or problems? Yes.
So you explained that sannyasa means that one is accepting and then nasa.
One is accepting everything favorable for serving Krishna, not acting in an immature, renounced way.
I mean breaking the words and relating to it, that you break the words.
What? Sannyas, yeah.
So what it means for my body?
Mayavadi says everything is illusion, basically, or at least the Lord's body is illusion. And they don't accept anything to please Krishna, obviously. If they accept anything, it's for their so-called self-realization.
Still, they carry that name, so what it means for them?
Well, they're not real sannyasis. They're nyasis. I mean, technically speaking, they're nyasis, not sannyasis. You know, a sannyasi means to accept something and reject something. So that technically, yes, I mean, there's so many technical definitions of the word, of words. So don't go around telling them they're not sannyasis. Just tolerate. Okay, on that happy note, all glories to Srila Prabhupada.